Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve, the podcast from Acadia, where we take time to get under the skin of the margin and collateral industry, to dig deep and present topical perspectives and insights on this hugely important sector. There's a digital revolution sweeping the margin and collateral industry. When it comes to handling, processing, and accessing data, the race to digitization is a far from uncommon concept for business leaders. And yet a proper understanding of what digitization really means and the benefits that come from it are perhaps, if we're honest, not fully appreciated. So why is this? What are businesses missing out on here? And crucially, when it comes to digitization, what are the barriers to entry? To discuss this, I'm joined by three expert guests. John Pucciarelli is Head of Industry and Regulatory Strategy at Acadia. Audrey Blater is a Capital Markets Research Director at Aite Navarica. And Katie Morgan is a Business Development and Markets Director at Like Zero. John, Audrey, Katie, welcome to you all.
Hey, John.
Thanks for having me.
Delighted to be here.
So it's great to have you all here. I'm looking forward to this conversation as well, because there's a lot for us to cover, a lot for us to think about here. So let's get a proper picture of what we're talking about. Let's get back to basics. What do we mean by the term digitization? John, I'll come to you first.
Thanks, John. Yeah, it's good to be back on Ahead of the Curve. I can't really remember how many podcasts I've done yet. But
you're our number one guest, John. You're our regular guest on the show.
Yeah, I think I'm going to add that to my title pretty soon. Anyway, yeah, digitization. I mean, a lot of people look at this in different ways, but I think the definition, right, the definition of what digitization is really is simply the process of converting information into a digital computer readable format. And what we're talking about here, and what we've been focusing from an Acadia perspective, and you're going to hear it from Katie on the Like Zero perspective, and of course Audrey helping us with our data study, which we'll talk about a little bit about in further in the podcast, is the digitization of legal agreements and the data really that sits inside of those legal agreements, and then the utilization of that data. And that, to me, that's what I think about when I think about digitization in the context of legal agreements. It's really the utilization of the data and how you can be more efficient, more effective with the use of that data. And that can translate across, whether you're in a bank, whether you're at a hedge fund, that legal data is essential in so many of your upstream processes, your downstream processes, whether it's trading, whether it's operations, et cetera. So that's how I look at it. I'm trying to keep it simple. But that's what we're going to focus on. That's what we have focused on at Acadia for quite a while. Especially when we talk about our agreement manager, service. It's really more about the data, but you have to get it in a digital computer, computer readable format first, before you can unleash the rest of all of the services and the value that we see coming out of that. So that's kind of my quick interpretation and simple interpretation.
Great top line there, and clear setting there of the agenda that we're thinking about here. When it comes to digitization, what does it mean for you, Katie, at Like Zero?
No, I think it's a great question, and also really looking forward to being here. It's my first experience of a podcast, so I hopefully will live up to John's king title.
Well, you're very welcome on this podcast, Katie.
No, thank you. I completely agree with John. At the most sort of basic level, digitization is taking any type of unstructured data and turning that into structured data through the process of translating that in machine readable text. I think a lot of clients that we typically work with, at Like Zero, often see digitization in the lens of OCR, which is optical character recognition, which essentially translates that document into machine readable text. But I think, as John said, what we're really talking about here is the data that digitization produces, and making sure that data is linked to context and actually is connected to the documents at all points of that kind of business flow. So I think, Audrey can definitely comment on this, but you've kind of got the digitization maturity curve. And at the most basic level, digitization, as I say, is just turning that into machine readable text. But the true value really lies from how you can access that data and how you can really drive your business processes off that data through understanding the context and what that kind of means.
Well, Audrey, let me bring you in here. What do you see as the most important aspects here, especially when it comes to the perspective that you have at IT Novarica?
Right. So when we were covering our study and interviewing different people, all we found is that digitization really meant different things to different people, which was very interesting. So, for instance, when we spoke to some banks, they felt digitization meant creating a PDF version of an agreement, while others felt it was more about being able to parse out some of the data, like Katie was just referring to, using an OCR in the document so you could query it if you needed to. In my mind, what I would say is that digitization is really more about starting with data and then creating agreement documents versus the other way around, which we seem to be quite a ways from, but that is the direction of travel. So when Katie mentioned maturity curves, yeah, that's kind of an end state situation, really starting with data and then creating documents out of that data. But right now, it's the other way around, isn't it? Where we have our documents first, and then we're trying to figure out how to create data out of these physical documents. And that seems to be the area that many banks are thinking about. But also, there are challenges linked to that, too.
Audrey, I'd like to stay with you on this because you're speaking to banks every day. What and who does this affect the most? Who should be thinking about digitization? And what are the drivers here, the main business drivers, do you think, Audrey?
Yeah, so I mean, the easy answer is pretty much everybody should be thinking about it. But in our recent study, what it showed is that many banks are really at the very early stages of digitization of agreements, and a lot of it is really concentrated in their ISDAs. So there are other documents out there like JMRAs that are still being handled in a very manual fashion. I would say that some of the drivers to digitize documents include projects. So they tend to be very siloed events like a LIBOR transition, for instance. What a bank will do is they'll try to identify a universe of agreements that are impacted by LIBOR transition. Back when we had the 2008 financial crisis, they had to identify a host of different agreements that might have been impacted, for instance, by credit changes in the Eurozone. So it usually comes out of some type of event, rather than being this proactive process to avoid that type of siloing and project-based work. We developed some estimates, that really the industry stands to reduce costs by digitizing documents, and it also has the effect of increasing confidence because you're lowering operational risks when dealing with a manual process. So I'm just going to spell some of these out. I would say based on our proprietary model, we believe that digitizing agreements would probably reduce the cost per document somewhere in the ballpark of $1,100 on the lower side to $2,100 on the higher side. Now, when we say that, that doesn't get a lot of attention. People say, well, that doesn't sound like a lot of money. But if we apply those estimates to the volume of CSAs in, for example, in Acadia's agreement manager, there's over 565,000 of them, then you're talking about a cost savings between $622 million and $1.19 billion. That's a lot of money. When we think about it more broadly and who should be digitizing, it really is everyone, particularly considering that the growth rate of new agreements per year is something on the order of 20,000. So you could see those numbers balloon up pretty quickly.
So clearly the challenge here, perhaps then, given the sense of opportunity and the scale that I'm getting from you all is one around access. How easy is it to access the data that we're talking about here in order to complete this task towards digitization? Katie, let me come to you on that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's, you know, completely agree with kind of Audrey's narrative there. I think in terms of access to data, how I've seen this change over the last sort of 7 to 10 years is that a lot of the time the business sort of the sponsorship for digitization inside a kind of typical banking institution is coming from, you know, operations or legal. But as Audrey says, really everybody needs to be thinking about digitization. So that translates to the kind of the front office, the risk teams, that actually the business case for this is shifting from I need to reduce my headcount by X number of percent or I need to go faster to actually I need a platform that's going to enable me to have trusted data sets that I can run my business processes off to also manage risk. And again, I think as we're increasingly talking to different sort of stakeholder groups around a bank, particularly in the front office, they struggle immensely to access the data. You know, they're looking at the edge case data and really a lot of that, the kind of contract data that they're consuming from, say, like a collateral system is a tiny slice of the picture that they need. So kind of access to the complete picture and access to that sort of trusted data set is immensely difficult actually for an organization because of these silos that's been formed, because they've dealt with project data, as Audrey says, in these respective silos. So pulling that all together into a sort of trusted golden platform where business lines can access that, I think is really kind of nirvana state for a lot of these firms. And I know through the research that we did, I think 80% of respondents said that they have an incomplete view of data and they have to constantly go back to the original agreement, which is a PDF copy, to get the completed view. So yeah, I think in summary, it's an immensely difficult challenge for all the different groups across a sort of a banking institution to really get the clean picture of that data. And thinking this through at an enterprise level, I think, is really important to kind of complete that picture.
John, I'd like to get your view on this from the Acadia perspective. It's that question of access and perhaps the scale of access as well. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think Katie hit the nail on the head when she talks about silos, right? Because the question really is, you know, how easy is it to access the data? Well, depending on who you talk to across the bank, you know, if I look at one silo and, you know, the people working in that particular silo might say, well, I can easily access it. Then it really comes down to how the quality of the data. But it's not, as Katie was saying, you know, it's not just about looking at it from a siloed perspective. The data that's embedded in these agreements cut across the entire organization, whether it's legal, compliance, trading, operations, et cetera. And it all needs to be in the same type of format. It all needs to be readily accessible. And when we talk about things like credit events, like what Audrey was talking about, when it's critical, not when it's just BAU or day-to-day, you know, day-to-day operations, but when we're talking about credit events, when we're talking about, you know, large scale, you know, risk events, whether it's counterparty risk or whether it's market risk, you know, to get that information or to get that data, and be able to pull it and access it in a clean way and know that you are confident about that data so that you can act and make decisions based on that data, for the benefit of your firm, for the benefit of your clients, is key. And I do think in that, you know, that 80%, from the data study that we did, you know, I would probably use the word alarming, right? And we've heard from a lot of firms saying, you know, when they went through the COVID period of everyone working remotely initially, they started thinking about that and say, well, how can I access the data? Am I able to do it? If I have PDFs, in a drawer somewhere, am I going to be able to know and scan through quickly some of the provisions in those documents? The answer is no to those questions. But even firms who have somewhat of a digital representation of those documents, because of the siloed nature of some of that data, it can be very, very difficult for even, you know, one part of the firm to access the data. So, you know, that's where, you know, from an Acadia perspective, that's kind of the genesis of the idea of agreement manager and a golden record of data, an agreed record of data between counterparties, et cetera. It really leads you to that, what Katie was saying, that nirvana state of having everything in one place for everyone, for every stakeholder in every organization to access clean, reliable data at the click of a button.
And Audrey, just building on those thoughts from John, it seems that confidence is a key component here. Would you agree with that? What are your thoughts?
Well, it is, because when we were speaking to the folks that we interviewed at banks, many of them had said, well, I'm confident in my data, but the reason why is because I can go back to the document and pull it out of a drawer or out of a file, you know, electronic file, obviously, and read it. It wasn't really about I'm confident in the data that was parsed. That was sort of iffy when we spoke with people. And also, you know, there were honestly people who replied, no, I'm not confident in our data. I am not confident that if there's a bigger event than Archegos, that we're ready to address that event, which is kind of alarming, right? As John put it, I think Archegos is an interesting example, and I'm glad it was brought up earlier, because if you think about what happened there, it was sort of like one of these things where, as Katie put it, all areas of the firm should be involved in digitization. So if the front office and credit was involved, maybe things like, you know, the firm's NAV declining would have been flagged and they wouldn't have been upgraded. I don't know if that was driven by a sales team or what business unit, but I feel like there was not enough connection of data to really pinpoint what the issues were. And that was, you know, what the industry is considering maybe a smaller problem. Imagine if you have another 2008 crisis, or even what happened at the, you know, the early months of the COVID-19 pandemic. Are people really ready? And I think that's really where the confidence question comes in. And I have to say right now, I don't think they are. Hmm.
So what are the barriers here then? Why does it seem so difficult? And obviously scale and access is something we've touched on already, but why does it seem so difficult for firms to adopt solutions to what is clearly a critical issue? John, what do you think?
Well, I mean, it really depends. Clearly, there are barriers, because what we're seeing, especially when we discuss these types of solutions in the marketplace, especially, you know, the ones that we're bringing to market, but, you know, we're one of others. You know, cost is one thing. And I think going back to the siloed nature of how some firms kind of look at their digital strategy, it's, well, you know, depending on who is looking at it, they might say, well, it's either maybe it's too expensive, or I already have a digital strategy, or, you know, it's sufficient enough for what I need to use it for. But then if you ask different parts of the organization, they might have a different view. So I think, and what we're seeing now is firms really looking at a digital strategy, especially when it comes to their agreements and across all of their agreements, right? There's hundreds and hundreds of trading agreements that they utilize every day, a more holistic view of it. So I do think that the barriers are more on that siloed perspective. But as firms kind of look across from a holistic perspective and saying, well, we need to join this up, we need to look across the universe of our agreements to see where they're all stored, how they're all represented, whether they're digitally represented or not digitally represented, how do we utilize that data, who's kind of the stakeholders in using that data? Are we joined up? I think the answers are probably no, but I do think that those are one of the larger barriers, that siloed nature and kind of looking at it from a, you know, have I already done this digitization already? Why am I going to do it again? And really, it's not really looking at the entire firm. It's looking at, you know, whatever universe or smaller part of the universe you live in. So, yeah. You know, that's kind of what we're seeing now. But we are seeing, you know, the good thing is I think firms are really recognizing that they do need a holistic strategy. That should start bringing those barriers down. Obviously budget is always key. It's always trying to figure out, well, how much is this going to cost me at this point in time? Can I fit this in? And how do I explain the value internally to my stakeholders across different parts of the universe? So again, my themes are, the holistic. I'll use that word again. But it really is, it seems like that is the key to unlocking the barrier to entry.
Katie, yeah. John talks about that holistic requirement there. Is there the appetite, though, from those that you speak to, from where you see things?
No, it's such an interesting point, and we talk about it a lot internally here, because often I think now everybody understands that digitization is so important and the value that it can bring. But I think one of the biggest challenges that we faced, almost over budget sometimes, is timing. There doesn't seem to ever be a good time to kind of look at this. And I think that has to really sort of, the mindset has to shift between being in a reactive state to digitization to a proactive state, because there's always going to be market pressures and regulatory needs that our clients need to respond to. That's kind of ever changing. I don't think there's going to be a downtime for any of our organizations where they can say, great, now we can look at overhauling our processes and bringing in digitization to, scale and meet the demands that we have. So I think it's really, as John says, it's trying to work with the business as a whole to say, let's look at this and break it down and really embed it into our core strategy to make sure that in the next Archegos default or the next market crisis, we're in a proactive state to respond to that. And I think that's a kind of key barrier. And then, the other sort of challenge I think that firms go through is, who's going to be the sponsor of that? Who's going to own this as a project to take forward? And we now work really, really closely with our clients and obviously Acadia as well to build out that business case so that whoever that sponsorship is really understands and underpins the value in the digitization and, the change that they're going to inevitably have to go through to start realizing some of that value. I think, John hit a number of the kind of key notes on the head there, but I think timing's always going to be a challenge and just shifting that mindset, as I say, to a proactive state, I think also will overcome some of the barriers between, or what we have today is kind of good enough, because it's only good enough until you realize it's not good enough and then it's too late. So I think that's what we often see. And as I said, we've been working really, really hard to try and make sure that we support clients on that journey, and we support them in their business case presentation, and we support them in through kind of very detailed acceptance testing, so that that transition and shift between what they have today to the kind of end state is trying to be as seamless, as practically possible.
A more proactive state, Katie says. Yes. Audrey, do you think we can overcome that barrier?
That's a really good question. I do hope so. A lot of it is created by cost and obviously regulatory burden at the banks. So the issue, just put really simply, is that because there are such stringent regulations, and there's a cost attached to that, it becomes a prioritization issue. But I do hope we get there one day.
Well, let's talk about the future. Let's talk about that day coming down the line. What are the long-term goals of getting legal agreement data, which is after all what we're talking about here, to an optimal future state? What does the future look like from where you are all sitting? It's our final question, and I'd love your thoughts on it. Katie, let me come to you first. What does the future look like, do you think?
I think Audrey hit the nail on the head in her very first response, which is, today we live in a world where documents create data. And I think really the future has to shift that complete sort of process around. So we've really got sort of data that are driving documents. And again, to labour the point of proactive digitization, but really a platform where our clients have trusted data that all of the business lines can run their business off, that's ready to adapt and to respond to the market or the regulatory changes that they're faced with today. And I think if we can get there, that's the kind of true future state. And our CEO often talks about changing from sort of dumb contracts to sort of smart contracts, and that kind of process around intelligent contracting and letting the data drive the contracting process, I think really is the kind of future state, and really where I hope firms to get where they can get to. But I don't want to kind of downplay the sort of smaller steps that firms can take today that will make a significant difference to their business going forward. And I actually think sometimes focusing on the kind of blue sky can often derail some of the programs because it seems too unachievable. So breaking that down into kind of key steps that really will build a foundation to help them achieve their long-term goals is also a really good and sort of well thought through strategy. So that's kind of, yeah, what I see from my seat.
And Audrey, how about you? What are your thoughts? What would you add?
Yeah, I mean, thinking about the maturity and kind of where we are and where we want to be, I would say, you know, right now we're probably in sort of these earlier automated stages where, you know, things like agreement data is being stored in PDF formats. And even though you may have data tied to ISDA agreements that's digitized, it's probably not possible right now to query across documents, you know, that are not stored in a single location. There are still operational risks, and I'd imagine the time to market speed could be better based on how these documents get executed. I think where we really want to go is this fully efficient stage, and the fully efficient stage really deals with the agreement process that's centralized. It's fully automated, probably through a shared market utility like Agreement Manager. We would want to see broad adoption by market participants taking place. And as we keep saying, I know this, like, it's almost becoming a catchphrase through this podcast, but data needs to create agreements rather than agreements creating the data as it does today. And then I would finally add that the amendment process, I know we didn't spend a ton of time on talking about amendments, but that really needs to become more streamlined as well, you know, which will reduce the time to market. And I think that's really the goal that the industry is looking for.
Well, lots of valuable thoughts there from Audrey and Katie. John, I'd like to leave the last word to you, though. Your thoughts on how we might see the future of digitization.
You know, John, I'd love to hop in my DeLorean, go 88 miles an hour, go to the future and find out a lot of things. But yeah, I mean, I love talking about this. And I think, you know, both Audrey and Katie hit the nail on the head. We're all in agreement on this. Data does need to drive everything. It needs to drive the documentation process. And frankly, it needs to drive everything that firms do in financial markets. Getting to that, you know, utopian state, I don't really love that word, but that's kind of the appropriate word of firms kind of backloading all of their either messy data represented legal agreements into one place, being able to access it quickly. And even the onboarding process, Audrey mentioned that, we talked about that, you know, time to market, getting ready to trade, speeding up all of that stuff. And I think that's where all of the, even the newer technologies that are emerging, even outside of digitization, where it's about speed and accuracy and getting things done more quickly, to me is an optimal future state. We think we can play a role in that. We're trying to shape that now. You know, it can be a daunting task, but we believe that we can get there. And we just want to make it easier for firms, right? But I think it's all part of being a partner with our clients, like Katie had said, making the business case, working directly with them to get them to that optimal future state. And we'll get there. It might take some time, but I think we're going to get there. And I think we have to get there because, you know, we've talked about a lot of different things here. Efficiency is key. Speed is key. And really making sure that your business is running the most optimal state possible, digital representation of legal agreement data is a big, big part of that. And, you know, that's what we're focused on, and that's what we're working for. So that's my, you know, hope for the future. And I think, you know, I'm very hopeful that at some point we're going to get to that space.
Well, John, good luck with the DeLorean and an optimistic view of the future there. And one we'll leave this conversation on now, because unfortunately we are out of time. John Pucciarelli, Audrey Blater and Katie Morgan, thank you all very much. And thank you for listening to Ahead of the Curve. We'd like to know what you think, so please do get in touch and share your thoughts. And you can find out more about Acadia by going to acadia.inc. But until next time, goodbye.